Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 20, Episode 34. This is Writing Excuses.
A deep dive on all the birds in the sky using the lens of who.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Don Juan.
I'm Dan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
So what we wanted to do is take these things we've been talking about, the who and the where and the why and the when, and take one work and look at how a single work is deploying all of these things. Last season, we took different works to represent different concepts. This season, we're taking one work because in reality, when you're writing, you're doing it all in a single work. We're going to start with this lens of who, and I'm just going to briefly remind you of some of the tools that we were talking about. When we were talking about the lens of who, we were talking about like what makes up a character, what makes up our experience of them. There's the idea of history and community, motivation and goals, what their stakes and fears are, how they react to things. And then there's also our proximity to the character. You know, are we looking at them in first person or third person, omniscient? Those are the kinds of things that we're thinking about. There's the mechanics of it, which voice we're using, but there's also our experience of them as a person. One of the reasons that I pitched this particular book to the group, All the Birds in the Sky, is because it takes a look at our two main characters, Patricia and Lawrence, at three different points in their life. There is their childhood when they're like 6 years old. Then we see them in middle school, which, as we all know, is a brutal time. And then we get to see them, actually, I guess it's four different times. We get to see a little bit of their teenage years, and then we get to see them as adults. So one of the things that I liked about it is that there is this opportunity to talk about who and talk about, we see the impact of their history as we move through the book. So I think one of the questions for me, for you all, is when you are thinking about how these characters move through this book, I'm taking things kind of sequentially. When we think about history and community, how is Charlie Jane using those to shape our understanding of the characters through the book?
I love that we're starting with the lens of who, because to me, that is the primary question of this book, right? This book, more than anything else, is a character study about a relationship between two characters. And using the time jumps is such a beautiful way for us to get a sense of how things that happen to them in early childhood influence the adults that they become and the choices that they make, right? So seeing these lenses evolve over time is, to me, the joy of reading this, of this deep commitment to asking questions about who are these people and why are they the way they are, which starts with at home, starts mm-hmm. with their family lives, who are their parents, who are their siblings, and the community that they're embedded in from the very, very start.
There's a tendency for readers to, just because this is the character who is my point of view character, and because these two characters have had a moment together, as a reader who is reading a thing that the author has, you know, just given me this moment, I will inflate the importance of that moment way beyond what in the real world that moment might be like. And that's one of the reasons why I so love a point later in this book where Lawrence and Patricia are talking and they've kind of been, you know, they've been apart and they realize they have a very different perspective on some of the things that happened as children. You know, as a reader, I'm like, oh, that was hugely formative. That's critically important to the rest of the book. And one of the characters is like, that was just this thing I did one time. Mm-hmm. And then someone else says that was the most important thing that you saved my life.
Yeah.
And I love that because it grounded me in my experiences of growing up. Mm-hmm. I have memories of things that were super important to me. And the other people are like, oh, that was just a Tuesday.
Yeah, I also think, though, one thing that I find really interesting about this book is like picking what you're talking about, Howard, it's like picking the moments also as a writer. What are the moments in your characters' lives that you choose to dramatize? And there is a moment later in the book in which I can't remember which one of them says something like, I realize that maybe like I recontextualize my entire life through the lens of this relationship. And this entire book is that. The book actually recontextualizes their lives through the lens of this relationship. There are whole periods of their life that are really important that either get told way later or like the schooling part, like all the interim parts where they were growing their separate selves. And instead it's the moments when they are together, which tells you what's the arc of the story that we're trying to read. And so there's so many things that happen in your characters' lives that you can focus on, but this book knows what it's about and therefore picks the specific moments that make that point.
Yeah, 100%. And then, you know, this also plays into the unreliability later in the narrative, right? When they're young adults out in the dating world trying to build relationships, there were a couple of moments that I really loved where someone would break up with a character or the character would break up with somebody. You know, I'm thinking about this with Patricia and Kevin, I think his name was, the guy that she was seeing, where she was like, yeah, I don't know what this relationship is. Is it a relationship? We keep trying to talk about it and not talking about it. And then he breaks up with her being like, hey, I tried to talk to you about this so many times and you wouldn't talk to me about it. Mm-hmm. And just seeing that inversion, and because we have all this context of where she comes from, we understand why her communication style is like this. We understand the trauma that she went through, this like rupture she had with her best friend, who's the only person who saw her and then ran away. And just her fear of commitment makes so much sense. And being able to put us in the moment of that inversion of her having to step back and be like, oh no, I see it now of what happened here, I think would have been a hard trick to pull off if we'd just been in this story about adults. But because we know what her relationship with Lawrence was like as kids, we can see the echoes of that reverberating throughout that. And, you know, Lawrence's relationship with his girlfriend that he like puts on a pedestal, which is like a little bit how he related to Patricia when they were children, and like all of these different elements. And it just creates all this really rich, interesting context for us to understand relationship dynamics of young 20-somethings in San Francisco in whatever era this is. You know, I don't know. That really, really worked for me.
Yeah. And there's something that Patricia says when they're in their middle school years in narrative. This was a metaphor for how it was with Lawrence, Patricia realized. He would be supportive and friendly as long as something seemed like a grand adventure. But the moment you got stuck or things got weird, he would take off. And it is, I don't know that that is necessarily true of Lawrence all the time, but I think that that is how she has assigned him in her brain.
Which makes the heartbreak later make so much sense.
Yeah. The other thing that struck me as I was reading was that both, because I had read the book initially, and then I was doing a reread for this, to prep for this. And one of the things that I was struck by is that both kids have this incredibly special moment when they're little, when they're six, where they feel, or not six, Patricia's is when she's six, Lawrence is a little bit older, but where they feel like they belong and that they are seen and that they are understood and that they have a gift and that they are special. And then they spend the rest of their life trying to get back to that place. And that is fascinating, like watching the frustrations and how that manifests. And they're both, they both are pushing against it in different ways because of the who they are, but they're both pushing against it, pushing against the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really interesting lesson to maybe take from this is that we've talked before, I believe, on the podcast about sort of essence and expression, like what something is at its core versus how it's being shown in the world right now. And I think sometimes it can be really easy as you're trying to make a story or a book go forward to get really focused on expression. What is the character's goal in this moment? What are they trying to achieve? Did they achieve it? You know, did the thing blow up? But why they are doing it is really interesting and also like should be really consistent, I think, or have a real reason for changing. And so I think sometimes like the character arc can become an arc of action as opposed to an arc of reason for action. And what's interesting about this is this book really focuses on all the things they do are like watching a friend like make the same kind of mistakes, but differently. It's like, if you know a friend who has a specific like dating habit, they date different guys, but it's like the same thing. It's like, oh, you're doing this again, but like in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
Like you learned this lesson, but not the underlying lesson.
Yeah.
And I think that is the thing that's really interesting to focus on and to take away as a writer.
There's another thing that Charlie Jane does that I thought was kind of subtle and interesting. And I will talk to you about that when we come back from the break.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Welcome back. There's this thing that she does where there are multiple times where Lawrence and Patricia define, even though like one is, you know, fantasy and one is science fiction, where they define the thing that they want as the way the other one moves through the world. So there's the example of this is... I wish I could sleep for 5 years and wake up as a grown-up, except I would know all the stuff you're supposed to learn in high school by sleep learning. So that's a science-based solution for her problem. But then Lawrence has a magic-based thing. I wish I could turn invisible or maybe become a shapeshifter. Life would be pretty cool if I was a shapeshifter. And it's this idea of, like, even though they are very different people, they are... they want what the other one has, and they both see the other one as, you have it figured out. I wish I could have it figured out like that.
And I think one of the most powerful things that Charlie Jane accomplishes with these two characters, and it relates to what you just described, in the world building, these characters have to see the magic, see the science fiction. And the way they are differently embedded in that universe I found it very, very immersive from the first chapter where Patricia is in the woods. I was there when Lawrence is building a supercomputer in his closet. I was there. And I think that use of POV in order to communicate the world building was very, very well done.
Let's actually talk about that a little bit more, because that's one of the other lenses that we use is the proximity to the character. And that's something that I think Charlie Jane plays with a fair bit through the the thing, that there are places where we go omniscient and all the dialogue is reported. And then Patricia said, you know, not, and then Patricia said, and then Patricia told him about everything that had happened. But there are other times where we do go deep into it and we live it and we have all the tactile experiences. What do you think about the ways that that's being manipulated?
So one of the things that impressed me the most about this book was the way that she was able to immediately, in one or two sentences, tell me exactly who the side characters were, though we never really get close proximity to any of them. This is so focused on Patricia and Lawrence, and to a lesser degree, Theodolphus. But, you know, I remember being so delighted early on in like the first or second chapter when she illustrates just beautifully that both kids are messed up by their parents and have a terrible relationship with their parents, but in completely different ways. And if I remember correctly, it's Lawrence's parents are kind of distant and don't pay a lot of attention, whereas Patricia's parents demand perfection. Yeah. And we just get that in, I think, one sentence each.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so powerful, and you immediately know exactly who these characters are and why they are problematic for our leads.
Though I also wonder, it's funny, thinking about POV, like how, like, if you were an outsider, like looking at these parents and kids, like there's something very childlike in the way they perceive the punishment. Like, did they really send Patricia to a room for like 18 years and only pass sandwiches under the door? Maybe they did, or maybe, but that also sounds like something like a kid would say, like, and then for like a year, I had to like only eat sandwiches with one bread. And like, how much of that is in the POV of a child?
Yeah. Sweetie, that was 15 minutes.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah. You had to go to your room for half an hour. It was not like, but I don't know, because we're so in the POV that we so get the other characters through this specific lens. And I think that's why they come through so clearly, because the characters, the main characters, have such a very specific point of view on their parents or on the adults in their life, that it comes through super clearly whether or not it's objectively true.
Well, and, you know, this goes back to the thing I was talking about earlier in terms of the inversion around understanding what the relationship was, because that's a tool of proximity, right? We're zoomed in so close on each of their experience of this relationship that, you know, we're getting this like 20-something, I don't know how to date kind of perspective.
Yeah.
And we're embedded in that until suddenly we get that revelation and then we zoom out, right? Everything just sort of snaps into focus in this really cinematic way where we can look back on the relationship that's been described to us and been like, oh yeah, that is how she's been treating that guy. Or like, oh yeah, he's doing this thing to her, and her experiences of what the hell is happening the entire time, right? And so I think that is such a masterful use of proximity and creates this feeling that I couldn't shake throughout the book, where I wasn't like experiencing characters, but like, I was like, oh, these are like my friends, was this feeling that I had throughout, which was like an interesting sensation. And they felt like people I was in community with rather than people I was learning about. And I think it is a little bit of that, trying to parse the thing that your friend is telling me. They're like complaining about the relationship and you're like, but is this your fault though? You know what I mean? Like that little bit of a thing of trying to like figure out how to help your friend. And I'm doing that same math with like, how do I help Lawrence through this situation? How do I get him to chill out about this girl that he's dating so that he doesn't ruin it? And you're like, my guy's still going to ruin it. And the only way he's going to figure it out is by ruining it. So, you know.
And as funny as I also see this about the entire world. So we'll probably talk about this more in one of the other lenses, but what I think is so, what I found really interesting and what I highlighted the most in this entire book were all the horrible things that were happening in the world that were asides to the characters' lives. They're like, and then that thing in Haiti, and I don't know, the thing and the heat and the, and they would just mention it among like things that were impacting their, like, I can't go on a date here because like, I have to remember to not flush the toilet because of that water crisis.
Yeah.
Back to my date. And so it's so, they're so hyper-focused in some ways on their own lives, as we all are, that they let the broader part of the world, which we mostly get an omniscient kind of aside, go until they cannot let it go anymore because it intrudes on their world.
The one that really stuck out to me was, you know, in the moment where Patricia and Lawrence are like finally like connecting and they're in the middle of that sex scene, and that's like very intense, and we're in their experience. There's a side line about like, and on the television, they were talking about how Superstorm, whatever the name of the storm was, obliterates half of the East Coast. And I went, damn, that's a really broad way to phrase that. And then forgot about it because of the intensity of the scene. And then she gets the call that her parents are like trapped and dying in this like thing. And it's like, oh, obliterate was used literally and intentionally. They just weren't observing this catastrophe that was happening outside their window. And it's like you feel the heartbreak of experiencing joy while the world is falling apart around you.
Yeah. And that is, again, that use of coming in and back out again with the proximity is so interesting. Before we wrap up, I did want to touch about the motivations and goals and the stakes and fears, because I realize that I'm wrapping like three lenses all into one, but it informs the way they are reacting through the whole book. How much do you think their motivations, goals, stakes, fears are set up in the beginning and consistent through the book, and how much do you think they change?
In the beginning of the book, these were kids who were trying to figure out how to interact with the world, how to survive in the world, and they arrived at two completely different tool sets. By the middle of the book, I feel like they've both figured out the world is broken and there are things that they can be doing to help. And they have completely different tool sets. And the fact that they have different tool sets and blind spots, the inability to see what someone else's tool set might provide, leads to the conflict at the end, where these two characters, who are both the good guys, are each other's antagonist.
I think what you said about how they, one of the things for me was that it sets up that they are trying to survive in, and that's something that they are constantly trying to do. But in the early part of the book, because they are children, their reactions are not how do I survive this thing that is happening to me, and that as we progress through, their reaction becomes, how can I influence things so that those things don't happen to me or anyone else again?
I think my one critique of the book, or my major critique of the book, I think comes to some of the stakes questions, right? Because we have these world stakes in terms of the world is getting worse, and we have this sort of tech bro attitude of like, I can save the world, which, you know, the Sam Bankman-Fried kind of perspective, which we've seen the flaws of, and we have this other perspective from her coming from this more holistic, magical thing. Sometimes that felt a little like, there's a version of this book that I would have really enjoyed, which is a contemporary realist novel about these two kids growing up and then living in San Francisco and experiencing this tension that is really core of what's going on in that city and has been going on in this city, especially when this book was written. And so sometimes that felt a little disconnected to me from the supernatural stakes, right? Because we have this thing where the tree at the beginning of the book asks this question, and that is established as a major stakes. We have the AI that he builds in the closet, and that's established as a major stakes. And so by the time those two things come back in, I've been thinking about them this whole time and kind of wondering where they are and knowing in the back of my mind that those are the stakes that are going to matter at the end of the day. But they're a little disconnected from the moment-to-moment action, right? Mm-hmm. And like, they are connected to the characters' motivations in that they are central to the questions that they're interested in terms of connectivity, community, helping people in terms of Patricia, and these technological solutions and sort of abstract ideas in terms of Lawrence. But in the specificity of those two things, which are plot important for the end, they disappear for a very long time. But because they're highlighted at the beginning, I never forgot about them. So there was a little bit of friction around the stakes of the story in that way. Even though the emotional stakes were so well rendered and so established, the plot stakes felt... I felt the gap.
I agree. I look at that problem and I think, dang it, Charlie Jane Anders wants me to read smarter than I want to read.
Yeah. I think that's true in so many ways. What I loved about the way the character interaction works, and this book feels very queer to me in a specific way, because it is about holding empathy and understanding for characters while also holding them accountable for the things that they're doing, which is a thing I think we strive for in queer community. I think we strive for it in a lot of community, but it's a thing that I observe, and something about the way the social dynamics work and the way the characters talk to each other felt so familiar to me in a certain way that I really appreciated about this book, because I think she is asking a lot of us to hold in our heads, here's who this character was as a child, here's who this character is now, and keep that empathy while also holding them accountable.
So... what's interesting, and I see that Dan has something that he wants to say, but I'm just going to slip this in. One of the things that I particularly liked about the tree and the AI was that both of them were things that could be explained away as a childhood make-believe. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I remember Eliza, the computer, and the way Change mm-hmm. Me is described at the beginning does not seem any different than Eliza, really. But they are pretending that she's that mm-hmm. this is real and that this is... and so I liked the tension.
For context, Eliza is one of the first chatbots, which was used, claimed to be used as a therapeutic tool because it was responding in a humanistic way, but it is just canned responses.
Yeah, it's just,
which I have thoughts about in
ChatGPT. Yes, also ChatGPT, that it, you know, gives the illusion of intelligence, but isn't actually intelligent. The thing that happened to her as a child could have been a dream that she had. Yeah. And so I liked that you describe it as stakes, but for me, it falls back into the history thing. Mm. It's that there's an imaginary friend that they both had that is shaping a lot of the decisions that they make, but then it turns out maybe not so imaginary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm glad you brought up critique. Full disclosure, I did not love this book. I'm kind of the dissenting voice here on the podcast to an extent, but specifically talking about what the stakes were, one of the realizations that I had partway through, and maybe this is a very different interpretation than some of the others had, is that what was going on in the world was really kind of beside the point. And a lot of the stuff with the tree and all of that, those stakes were there, but the real core of it was just who they were as people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And every time I would say, oh, this book is so boring, nothing is happening, I would have to stop and say, no, actually, there's a lot happening. It's just all internal to who they are. Mm-hmm. This is not a book where there are big action scenes. There are action scenes in it. But it is a book where, you know, like the breakup with Kevin was a really big deal. And those kind of smaller moments were actually, for me, the real stakes of the book, is who these people are and what are the milestones of their progression to become somebody different.
And I think when it comes to stakes, one of the things that I took away from it was the idea that, like, you want to think your life is so important and maybe it isn't, even though these characters are, in fact, important to the world in some way. They felt like they were being, it felt for me, for a lot of the book, that they were tools of greater movements they didn't understand. They were tools of people who had big plans that they would never tell them. And so they were just trying to, like, do the best they could to get from moment to moment of happiness, because everything they were doing was at somebody else's behest. Like, both of them were working for organizations they didn't fully understand, doing things that they didn't fully get until it was happening. And so I felt like in some ways, maybe it's like, and there's all that thing about aggrandizement and, like, whether or not mm-hmm. you're supposed to think you are the driver of the story or not in a story that's so focused on two characters. It's like this interesting contrast between how much does one person change the world and how much are they just trying to remain in the world as it changes around them.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that worked for me was that I did come in reading it as a character story. And so, because there were so many other things in the world that were happening as background, the fact that that action that I was interested in was also happening in the background just kind of felt like part of the mm-hmm. texture. That for me, this was two characters who both just wanted to belong, and they also wanted to stop feeling insignificant.
One thing that, and I think Dan and I are sort of coming at the same critique from different directions, and I think it had different eventual emotional responses to it, but, you know, one simple rubric I have, and this is very reductive, so don't yell at me, but, like, is the distinction between literary fiction and genre fiction is often around this idea of literary fiction being primarily about portraiture and genre fiction being primarily about building out a model, right? Mm-hmm. It's about asking a question and answering it, right? And this novel is, I think, attempting to do both in that it is riding that literary and genre line in a certain way. And I appreciated its instincts to try and do both, but I think there's a little bit of friction between those in terms of the overall question of how do we solve world problems? It's about connection. It's about integration. It is about, like, organic mycelial network kind of things, which is the eventual hybridizing community approach and technological approaches, right? That is sort of the thing that she's arguing for at the end of the book. But then the substance of the book is primarily about, you know, character portrait and relation portrait of two people healing and bonding and coming together in this thing. And that becomes the metaphor, that becomes like the synthesis in this dialectical approach of these two different things. That relationship encompasses those two things. But what I loved about the book was primarily the literary project of portraiture.
I'm just going to say that I wonder now how much of that is intentional, because what you just described is actually what's happening in the book. The
yes.
conflict between fantasy mm-hmm. and science fiction, mm-hmm. the conflict between two genres mm-hmm. of understanding the technical and the mm-hmm. touchy-feely.
Yes.
And with that, I think it is time for us to give you your homework. So for your homework, since we are focusing on The Lens of Who, and one of the things that I found most compelling about these two is how they were shaped by the other person. Who does your character envy and why? And what action can they take to act on that desire?
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, Dan Wells, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.